Hello, everyone, and here we are in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, at the Inn of the Ozarks. And we are, of course, at the Ozark UFO Conference, 20th year. Can you imagine that? Lots of people here. A little cool. Not Easter for a change. A lot of times the date falls on Easter. Eureka Springs, a beautiful place. We urge you to come by here and visit sometime. It's a wonderful, wonderful vacation spot. Kind of like Switzerland in Arkansas. We have some pretty interesting things today on our show. Sam Morano will be here. He is with MUFON Illinois. And you probably know him from our shows on the O'Hare incident and other things. He's going to tell us about a creature in the trees up in Wisconsin connected with UFO sightings, among other things. And then later on, we will have Paul Von Ward. And Paul will talk about ancient mysteries. He'll actually try to tie down biblical and historical terms, myth and legend, in what he believes, and I believe I'm stating it correctly, that the Earth has been visited by extraterrestrials from other galaxies and other planets for eons. A long time, in other words. Yeah, we have an interesting show. Roberta Scott is our producer. We'll be right back, and Sam Morano will be here. I think you'll find this a very interesting interview. He's going to talk about some people I know about up in Wisconsin. Flush it out for us a little bit. So don't go away. But first, this word. Why visit the Grand Canyon in Arizona? Marv Mason knows why.
Mainly because the Grand Canyon is known as one of the seven natural wonders of the world.
No one gives a more personalized tour or knows more about the Grand Canyon than Marvelous Marv.
My main thing is education on the geology, because the Grand Canyon is a life record. It shows us where we were at one time on the planet with the continental drift and all the layers that were laid down by sediments, and then how the canyon was carved. And, of course, the views, you know, picture doesn't do it justice. But it's nice to have somebody there tell you about it that's lived there.
It's the best way to tour the Grand Canyon. Marv picks you up in a modern van at your hotel in the Grand Canyon area and takes you on a day-long tour. Contact Marvelous Marv Vacation Tours. Call and talk to him personally. 928-707-0291. Or visit his website.
MarvelousMarv.com. Real easy, real easy.
Well, here we are at the Ozark UFO Festival. And I call it a festival because it's so much fun here in Eureka Springs. And we have a witness of that who took a lot of fun with him last night, Sam Morano.
Oh, yeah, I'm feeling the fun today.
Yeah. Actually, they have a little get-together after everything's over here, at this little, I don't know the name of the place, a club or a bar or whatever.
They call it, the, the something saloon, the Lone Star Saloon.
Yeah, that's it, the Lone Star Saloon.
Yeah, and I'm feeling the kick of the Lone Star today.
And, of course, you He didn't have that much, folks. It's just the fact that you're not used to that.
No, I'm not a drinker, so I had myself a couple drinks and wanted to salute the other guys that were here and done a great job. And tied up in the festivity.
Yeah,
I guess.
The only reason I mentioned is not to say that the director in Illinois is drunk. it was the fact that that's one of the important things about these conferences is camaraderie, and you get to meet each other and you've known each other.
Sure.
And you get to see each other in person, and
that's a perfect, you know, like we were talking earlier. Here we talk to these people via internet, or we see each other in documentaries, or hear about certain cases over the internet, radio, television, whatever. But it's rarely an occasion we get to see each other. Here you have Timothy Good coming in from England to the Ozarks. Mm-hmm. This is a fine gentleman. Takes his time. Actually spends money to get here. I mean, the end result is these trips cost you money, you know, for these speakers.
Sure.
And I think it's a labor of the heart.
Well, sure it is. No doubt about it. We get a lot of things that we've talked about over the years. And how is our friend Sean doing up in Wisconsin these days?
Sean and Robin are doing very well. And I try to speak to them at least once a week. We used to speak, as you recall, back in the heyday of all the strange stuff going on. We used to speak a couple times a day. But he's doing really well. Things are really coming to a degree of control, normalcy, whatever you want to call it. I think the whole interaction of this very strange event to them was uplifting in the long run, though it was extremely frightening, extremely unusual.
Right. And if you want to know what we're talking about, and we're going to get you a little closer to that mic simply because of the background noise. Is the fact that we have an interview of Sean on our website that you can go to and click on it. It's still there. We did it several years ago, and Sam got involved in the investigation, and some of those things are really phenomenal.
Yes, hands down.
What's happening there?
Jared, those things, I'm saying things on tape that I've only heard about. In other words, phenomena with UFOs coming out of the clouds, rotating triangular discs, objects that look like carpenters' angles, rectangles, etc., actually coming out of clouds, rotating, giving off their own illusion of clouds, atmospheric disturbance, etc. And he has this all on tape, you know. And we actually sat down, I and his wife, 12 hours of footage.
I've talked to her on the phone, too.
Isn't she a sweetheart?
Quite sincere.
Yeah, she's straightforward, no BS. Yeah. This is a genuine, straightforward person.
Either you mentioned it to me or he did or somebody, something about it. He needed a flatbed truck at one time. What was that about?
He calls me up on Easter, right? Yeah. I'm coming home from, we had a get-together dinner, the whole thing. And so here it was 2 years ago. He calls me up. I'm walking in the door, and the phone's ringing, and he's all hysterical. The tree crawlers are here. Understand, we gave names to each type of unusual creature, and believe me, these things that were there appeared to be living things, and everything that he witnessed seemed to be, these are living things, secreting some type of, I don't know if it's a saliva or what, you know, purpose this the secretion is, but... and they have eyes. I have footage of this stuff that, or I should say he has footage that I've done enhancements on, but we're really holding off on this to have it all analyzed, to have it all assembled, and bring this out as the case that it should be. And this way, it's not going to be debunked, and people aren't going to laugh at it. Mm-hmm. There's going to be credibility in back of it.
So there will be something that you can see, I guess, if you needed a truck.
Oh, yes. He shot this darn thing, and I don't know how many times he was shooting at it with his high-powered 22. Getting back to that. Thanks for bringing me back there, by the way. And I got off on the track. But I call up John Schuessler. Hey, John, got a guy up here, our guy in Fredericks, shot this thing, and he thinks that he killed it, and it may be falling out of the tree. What should I do with it? He says, well, just go up there, get it, stick it in the bag, bring it to a university, and have him analyze it. I go, wait a minute. We don't have a certain protocol for this. And second of all, the object's so big, I'm going to need a flatbed truck.
Yeah.
He goes, what? I go, yes. So luckily, what it was, whatever it was still alive, and it moved away. But he did shoot it. He shot at it a couple times. First of all, he thought it was some turkey in the tree. When he looked at it and was moving closer, it was substantially larger than a turkey.
Did it ever fall to the ground?
No, it actually it crawled away, moved through the trees. Uh-huh. And when this thing moves through the trees, it moves the entire trees. And
these are, I'm sure, because it's big.
Oh, it's massive. And from what I see, it looks like it does have an eye. Now, if this is some sort of biotechnology, I don't know. But it's truly unusual. It knows how to cloak itself into the environment. And it has scales much like, or skin much like a Gila monster.
Oh, really?
Yes. He calls it, he refers to it, when he sees it, he says it looks like a placosomus, an algae-eating fish that you'd find in a fish tank. They usually come from the Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he describes it. It looks like a big placosomus. So what in the heck is this? I don't know. I don't know if the aliens came there because of all this UFO activity and they just let the zoo out to eat. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, right. We understand. Or maybe it's their pet.
It's their pet, yes. Let Fluffy out to do its thing.
Well, you know, some people have boa constrictors as pets.
Yeah, maybe they got monster placosomus that crawl in trees, you know, and peek in windows, by the way. It does love to go near the windows and watch them. But that's a type of unusual activity to boot the usual UFOs, orbs, extremely large craft. The other thing is, he may have told you about the object that was hovering over his house for days on end, and it looked like a hole in the sky, and it had notches on it. He referred to it as if it was bit by a shark, and I finally tried, you know, the thing is, people talk only within their own realm of experience. Well, his terminology is far different than what I was able to, you know, relate to, and actually... Rob helped quite a bit in determining.
Rob Kutowski in Phoenix. And we have another show coming up, Rob, and we'll see him this fall as well. Maybe you can come out to Chicago. I'm from Chicago out to Phoenix.
I hope to. I've been threatening him. I'm going to be down there doing some
research.
Well,
maybe we can all get there at the same time.
That's the best thing. And what we've been, as you know, during that whole episode, these things were going on simultaneously, Fredericks and the events out there in Arizona. So I would have... Sean on the line with Rob, and the funny thing is the two of them were talking about the same things, describing it a little bit different. You know, for instance, these unusual tubes that looked like lucite tubes. They would be there, and it looks like to me, from what I'm seeing, some sort of webbing or fabric of possible dimensional fabric. So some of these experiments or experiences may have to do with dimensional objects.
Yeah, we've been out to Rob's house, and there's definitely something going on, and it might be interdimensional. It just kind of shows up, creeps around.
Well, you saw it firsthand. It scared the hell out of you.
Yeah, oh, yeah. No doubt about it. And Sean, you know, he and his wife are scared a lot. I think
They've
calmed down a little bit now. But
yeah, they calmed down. My wife, Julie, and I, we went up there to see them, and we just love them. They're like family to us, and, you know, and... they have a daughter there, which is, of course, his main concern. You have to realize, during this whole episode, he was going through what would be post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, and part of that is the hypervigilance where you're staying.
Well, actually, that probably enabled him to see some more of the stuff, probably.
He was able to stay up at night because he wouldn't go to bed.
Uh-huh.
The other thing is, of course, we had mentioned the implants in his eyes, and I'm sure he mentioned that too. Vic Connor went up there in November. I had to go down to the Ozarks. It was both a trip and an investigation. So I was gone, but I was able to monitor the investigation.
Yeah.
Vic Connor went up there during that period of time, said that there was two metallic objects that were, I believe, hexagon shape as far as the drawings, in next to the iris, an exact location, both eyes. By the time I got to see him later, I believe it was November, and he came down to the house, as he had a couple times. There was actually a growth over it. In other words, the eye covered it up with its own growth, and it was no longer visible. But I had asked him prior to this to go into the bathroom and use a black light to look over himself, and he says, what am I supposed to look for? Well, you know, I would never reveal what you're supposed to look for. I don't know if there's anything there. I just want you to tell me what you see. And he saw these objects in his eye just glowing. And it's much unlike any sort of eye injury. Usually a scar tissue will also do that, or a bacteria in the eye. You'll have some sort of luminescence. It was truly different and in the same location.
Wow.
But since that point, he's been able to see, it appears to be, and we're going to have to do further tests, but he's able to see wider ranges of the infrared and the ultraviolet from what I could detect so far. And if we could play this out through, you know, prove it through some experimentation, I think it'll be interesting. The other thing is those items have been have been seen in his eye by an optometrist, and yes, they are there.
You've been up to Wisconsin. I get the idea that they live pretty far out someplace, and
they're about a mile out of a very nice town, relatively small. It's an extremely wooded area, and it's also part of what would be the Ice Age Trail, which means that this area was not destroyed in the last glacial period, which I believe, let's see, Never Kick Indian Woman, isn't it? And so it was Wisconsin period.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful area, a lot of ferns. It looks
But it's isolated.
Oh, it's isolated. Right. But it's not to the point that, you know, it's thousands of miles or hundreds of miles, or for that matter, even 10 miles away from civilization. He has people literally across the street and probably about a quarter mile from each other.
Any of those other people see anything?
Absolutely. This is an area that has a history of UFO activity. A major sighting was seen literally in the town over the lake. And one gentleman started telling him about it, but we're trying to find historical documents on that. There was also a very large and well-known case in the 50s where a hairy, small humanoid was seen actually just down the road from him. So, and that's a known case. And I think, I don't know if it's an ICAP case or, I don't know. I'd have to find out.
What's the name of that town Sean lives in?
Fredericks.
Okay. In case somebody wanted to check it out on a map or something.
Check it out on a map. Don't go up there.
Yeah, right.
Don't bother the man. Remember what the thing in the tree got? You might get it too. So don't go bother the man.
Well, yeah, that's not something that a lot of curiosity seekers should be around, I don't think.
Well, he had people bothering him, but these people were driving around in black Suburbans with whip antennas, and they came right up to his property. Also,
well, that doesn't sound like a tourist.
No, it sounds like a agency of some sort. And then they had one of these fiber optic telescopes peeking through the floor. The wife, Robin, called me up in tears, screaming and saying, "What are they doing? What's going on?" I tell you what, I lived through this, obviously, at a distance, at a comfortable distance, and still felt the terror these people were going through. And not every, every UFO experience or extraterrestrial contact is something that's going to be a very comforting experience.
Yeah,
some are terrifying.
Some of them, they're scarred for life. Others are, of course, it's all life-changing, but... Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if we could put a percentage on it or not. Maybe half and half, or 80%, 60%. Really have repercussions.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I would say so.
Yeah. That of course don't hold us to that statistic,
no.
Folks.
No.
We haven't. It's the Jerry Pippin Institute of Knowledge, so you can take that for what it's worth. Sam Maranto is our guest, and, of course, he is the director of MUFON for Illinois. And it's about a 10-hour drive from Chicago down here, I think.
It's a pleasurable ride, usually. And some, you know, this is what I'm going to do right now is actually give a little a little bit of good tiding for this group here. This is a magnificent group of people. First of all, if you haven't been down here, do it. It's a reasonable, I'd say highly enjoyable, but reasonable conference compared to many others. And all are good. Remember, all are good. But this one here has got a certain feel about it. And, boy, I love it. It's great.
Oh,
you've been here so many
people
times.
Keep coming back. They come.
Yeah. And then Lou just does a fantastic job putting this together.
And let's give the MUFON website, or does Illinois have something separate?
Illinois has its own website. We're still redoing it. The mm-hmm. other thing is, if you would like to get in contact with me, you can always call me at 708-460-7606. Again, that is 708-460-7606. Check out the MUFON site, the international site, which is www.mufon.com. If you'd like to file a report there, you can do it. It's very convenient. It'll be forwarded to whichever director it needs to go to. And, Jared, thank you very much.
I've enjoyed it. You have a safe trip back to Chicago, and we'll be talking soon, and maybe we'll see each other in Phoenix.
I hope so, my friend.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you very much. Sam Maranto is our guest, and he's director of MUFON in Illinois. Hi, I'm Jerry Pippin, and we're broadcasting from the end of the Ozarks. The Elvis Presley Story. A collector's item thought to be extinct until recently. Now, all 13 hours of this famous worldwide radio broadcast series, produced in the 70s by rock and roll legend Ron Jacobs from Watermark Productions and heard around the world and hosted by Wink Martindale, is now available on CD. Hear the complete story, from the cradle to the grave, Elvis Presley. He was truly the king of rock and roll. The Elvis Presley Story is a collector's item. With all of the music and the people who made Elvis the king of rock and roll. Order now. Limited time discount price, $39.95 plus $5.95 shipping. Don't miss the Elvis Presley Story, available to you exclusively through this radio offer. Order now the Elvis Presley Story. Hurry. Supply is limited.
It's Jerry Pippin, and we are in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And we're talking with Paul Vaughn Ward, who has a book out called Genes, well, God's Genes and Consciousness is the correct title, Paul. That's the least I could do is give the correct title for your book. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Well, that's meant to be alliterative, you know, God's Genes and Consciousness. It has a good ring to it.
Yeah, well, now, you actually have a very interesting subject, and we're going to go into it in great detail here. Your thesis or hypothesis or actual philosophy or whatever is that this has been going on for a long time.
That's true. What I've done is take as a hypothesis that the stories told in the sacred texts, I mean the Bible, the Sumerian texts, Egyptian texts, and so on, and all the traditional stories that societies tell about their origins and where information came from, knowledge and wisdom, if you take that as not fanciful, you know, imaginings of ancient people, but as descriptions of something of the truth and the reality they experience. So the hypothesis is that's history.
Well, it sounds logical to me, and you start putting these things together, and all of a sudden, you're probably right on.
Well, you know, what happens is once you start building from that early era, and thinking of the so-called gods and aliens and demons and angels and so on, it leads you right to the current day with our own experience today of contacts and communications with other beings and all levels of consciousness.
Let's get into this then a little bit. Basically, right off the bat, when we're talking about UFOs, what are we really talking about here?
Well, I think UFOs are... You know, they're in different categories. I use the term ABs or advanced beings for all levels of consciousness. Some of them may be flesh and blood, I mean, you know, in the electromagnetic spectrum that we live in and work in, but others may be interdimensional or multidimensional apparitions or contacts with humans that we see and communicate with through our own inner senses.
Well, we'll call them ABs, since it's what you call.
Well, I like that, because it has a better sound than alien or ET, you know.
Well, yeah, it certainly is, and it kind of covers the subject with a couple of words there, which is important.
Well, it's like it permits us to compare apples to apples, rather than talking apples and oranges, and that's what divides people, you know. You're talking about ETs, and I'm talking about angels, and so we don't talk to each other.
And meanwhile, we're probably talking about the same thing.
We're talking about the same thing. If you look at the descriptions of the experiences in the Bible, in ancient text, they're very similar to the descriptions that we have today.
You're absolutely right. The first time I became aware of this was the old book years ago called Spaceships of Ezekiel.
That's exactly right. That's a perfect example.
And you start thinking about that, but you go back in your book, you talk about the Sumerians and the Hebrews and on and on.
On and on. I mean, the descriptions are there. And actually, I don't claim credit for this, you know. Raymond Fowler was one in one of his books who listed...
I had Raymond on the air here a while back.
He has a list of like 25 or 30 examples from the Bible that correspond to current reports. And the descriptions are the same, so that's why I say they're apples to apples. We're not talking about different phenomena, we're talking about similar phenomena.
And it's been going on since humankind.
I would say from the beginning.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I sort of agree with Zachariah Sitchin's interpretations of the Sumerian text that, you know, the Anunnaki in Sumerian, the Anakim in Hebrew in the Bible, were involved in the early stages of human development. I don't think they created humans, but they certainly intervened in human development at a genetic level.
Well, I can see, in fact, we just had recently a report from Brazil about some beings that had red eyes and were somewhat brownish in tone and skin tone, probably, and the natives down there thought they were devils.
Yes, yes.
And through human history, especially mankind before we reached our so-called sophistication of today, which is debatable, and I don't want to get into an argument about it.
Well, we might have an agreement there, because I think we've had some devolution rather than evolution.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that, too. The point is that they could very well be angels and demons, and we're talking about the ABs.
Right. Well, if you go back to the Book of Enoch, you know, which was discovered in the
sure.
Dead Sea Scrolls, and it was not included in the official Christian and Judeo sacred texts, but it describes this history of how we started using this concept of demons and angels and the good guys and the bad guys. And they were really advanced beings who had a disagreement about how to interact with humans. And actually, those who were called sinners, because they were under the god sin,
yes.
were the ones who were trying to help humans by giving us information and knowledge and so on to help us advance.
Somewhat like we have today in political and history context, what you say is sometimes, usually, just the opposite.
Just the opposite. It's been turned in reverse. So the good guys are now the bad guys.
Right. And so where are we going with this?
Well, where we're going, I think, what I'm trying to do, I call myself a cosmic puzzle master.
I like that term, too. You're full of it today.
I'm trying to fill in the blanks in the crossword puzzle, you know, of what I call an interdisciplinary cosmology. We've had a lot of good work done in the UFO field. We've had a lot of work done in parapsychology. We've had a lot of work done in quantum physics, a lot of good work done in parapsychology. But those disciplines are kept separate. And what I've tried to do in my little interdisciplinary approach, and that's what I do in Gods and Genes and Consciousness, is to bring them together and say, how do these corroborate one another? How do they confirm this hypothesis of AB intervention in human history?
In other words,
and I think it's fantastic, the amount of material that is in correlation.
Yeah, there's plenty out there. If you stop and think about all the religious documents, fine literature, some not so fine literature, but they're all based on the same thing.
Based on the same thing. And then you go back and look. What I try to do is take that literature, but go back and also look at the fossil record. What are the archaeologists and paleontologists?
I want to talk to you about that, because you bring that up in your book, and I noticed that a little earlier when I knew you were coming by.
Right.
You say there's actual fossil, I guess, proof that we're talking about alien intervention.
AB intervention. I mean, there are several, you know, missing links in the fossil record. I mean, when you jump from Homo erectus to Homo sapiens, there's a big gap. This happened so suddenly about 300,000 years ago that you cannot explain that leap in terms of evolutionary theory, which is hypothesized to be about a 2% change over a million years. And when this happens in a few hundred years or a thousand or so years, can't explain it. And the same thing happened when you go from early humans to Homo sapiens sapiens. Mm-hmm. You had the Neanderthal and the Cro-Magnon and Homo sapiens all together, and I think Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal are really subspecies of the Homo sapiens species. But when you have these gaps, you can't explain it. And you look at the dates of those gaps, and they correspond with the Sumerian story of intervention by advanced beings about 300,000 years ago. Also, the bringing of those humanoid beings from Africa to the Middle East, to the Garden of Eden area, about 100,000 years ago. And lo and behold, we discover fossils in the Middle East where we say these are the first Caucasoids, and that's 100,000 years ago. And you look at the genetic research, where the phylogenetic trees have been developed to project back when did these different groups of humans break off from the mainstream out of Africa. you arrive about the same dates. 100,000 years ago, Caucasoids, 50,000 or so years ago, the Mongoloids. And this coincides with the development of AB involvement, according to the literature, in human civilization.
Well, you know, you talk about this in your book a little bit, and I wanted to ask you something about... We talk about disclosure these days.
Right.
We're talking about the government's hiding it.
Right,
or,
yeah.
And then on the other hand, I just, you know, half of my shows or a third of them, I've talked to people who've been, you think they've been abducted or they have been or they had some sort of contact or something.
Right, exactly.
It seems to me that maybe, and somebody told me you said this once, that they both had the same goals. That's the reason they work hand in hand, these people. The ABs like the secrecy, and so is the government.
Well, I think there are some ABs who like the secrecy, and the government, of course, likes it. But see, my issue in this book in particular, I mean, I've had looked at the problem from different perspectives, but in this particular instance, I think the reason we have government cover-up, and it's not government cover-up per se. It's really the powerful interests that are economic, political, religious forces mm-hmm. that really operate behind the scenes. But these folks don't want to talk about a cover-up. And if it were just a few ETs and UFOs out there, there would be nothing wrong with saying, oh, well, we've been studying them for the last 50 years.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But it's more than that, because if you admit to that suppression and cover-up.
You assault the religion and everything
the
else.
The whole story of history, mm-hmm. you see, is exposed. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's the fundamental motivation for keeping this story under the wraps.
Well, who's the greatest threat here? The ABs or the government?
Well, I think the greatest threat is humans on humans.
Ourselves.
Exactly.
We are the enemy.
We are the enemy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that, you know, I conclude towards the end of the book that, you know, there are a lot of experiences and interventions that are considered to be hostile and negative and so on, but the majority of the reports are really positive and benevolent, offering good advice to humans about what to do about the environment and all those kind of things. So I conclude that in the majority we have ABs who are either interested in supporting human development, helping us solve our problems, not directly, but with advice and insight and so forth. And they're observing the prime directive. I mean, they're keeping a little bit hands-off. Now, I think there are some ABs, for example, that do want to take advantage of us and may collaborate with secret parts of our government.
When you talk about taking advantage, I'm going to get to the majority in just a second, but when you're talking about taking advantage, what are natural resources or something? Or?
Well, I think, this is a garden planet in our solar system and in our galaxy, and it offers a way station for beings from elsewhere to take advantage of the resources that we have here, to take advantage of the hospitality, if you please, of our natural planet. And there's also, you know, as I'm sure you know and all of us know who've read some of the reports, there are reports that people are, not people, but other humanoid-like beings are taking advantage of our energy, of our psychic energy.
Zapping our energy field and the vampire story, literally taking blood, and then you have cattle mutilations, human mutilations reported.
Well, those I see more as experimental and studying, just like we do lesser species
sure.
ourselves. I mean, you know, we go into the wild and we treat them
yeah,
the same
we,
way we're
we
being
think
treated.
Nothing of tagging a wild animal, and they yeah, probably think nothing of tagging us.
Exactly. I mean, we have to think of it in those terms.
Yeah, I didn't even interrupt you. We're on a roll there about where you were headed.
Well, the point I was trying to make in this book, drawing all this together, is I'm trying to make the point that sure, there are ABs, there's been intervention in human history, but that's history, and what we have to do now is to think about our own responsibility for our reactions. What do we do with that information and that knowledge? I'm a psychologist in my early career, and you know, when you have a person that has a fragmented personality, multiple personality syndrome or disorder as we now call it, MPD, you have to go back and find the authentic self, help the person find their natural core, and then integrate this information from the various factions into a whole. And I think that's where we are as a fragmented species, divided among ourselves.
And evidently the ABs are fragmented.
Absolutely. And we have to get our own act together as a species it seems to me, in terms of dealing with this planet and the threat that we are to our own ecosystem.
Well, Paul Von Ward, you've got a scientific background. As you said, psychologist. How'd you get interested in this subject? I mean, a lot of your friends probably figure this is way out.
I know they do. I've had a checkered career. I started out as a good Southern Baptist minister as a young man, and then I went into graduate school in psychology.
Well, it sounds like my history. I wasn't the minister, but everybody in my family was.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
I was the outcast, the radio guy.
Well, I started that way, and then I was in graduate school and studying clinical psychology, and I got more interested in parapsychology than the traditional.
Sure.
Classes that were there, because I always had this interest in what is on the edge of knowledge that people are not paying attention to, and I had an intuitive sense that, you know, that's where the next stage of development is, on the frontier, on the edges. But I got in the Navy in the early 60s, like a lot of us, getting in the military, serving our country and all that sort of thing, and became a naval officer for a few years. But then I got an appointment by Lyndon Johnson to be a diplomat in the Foreign Service. So that took 15 years of serving in the State Department and overseas.
Where are you basically?
Well, I served in France and in Martinique and Dominican Republic and West Africa and in Washington and in NATO.
Well, about the only French I know is je ne sais pas. I don't know.
Well, French was my first foreign language. I speak French and Spanish, a little bit of Russian, and I speak a lot of Southern.
I understand that. So, you go from the Foreign Service to what do we call ABs in that service. You might be an ambassador to them.
Well, people ask me, what's a psychologist doing in the Foreign Service in the State Department? I said, can you think of a better place to have...
I think, actually, that's probably a pretty good qualification.
Pretty good qualification.
So they can say what they want to about Lyndon Johnson, but he was smart enough to get you into that.
Well, I don't know whether they consider it smart enough. My colleagues now have sort of turned me out from their circles because... Really, when you start making connections, not only with the UFO, ET phenomenon, but questioning this whole history of our institutions, I mean, I make everybody mad. I mean, you know, it's in the church.
You're an equal opportunity.
I'm an iconoclast. It doesn't matter what sacred cow, I take a look at it.
Well, I personally think that's pretty healthy.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think raising the question, in other words, people say, how can you do this after the certainty of your religious beliefs? And I said, now I've reached a point where my certainty is based on a sense of uncertainty,
yes.
A sense of unknowing. We live in an open-ended universe where the questions are there, and it's continual pursuit, new thinking.
You're the one who brought it up about being a Baptist minister originally.
I didn't mean to throw the conversation off.
I just wanted to ask you something. How does all of this with... your book and the theory, how does that fit in? Are you still religious at all? Or?
Well, I have...
Maybe that's the wrong term.
Yeah, because religion is a modern invention. I mean, it was invented within the last 2,000 years. Religion comes from the Latin words religare, to reconnect, and religions are connect man back to God. I don't think we were ever separated.
Yeah, I got a good point. I have a fellow who he got out of the Southern Baptist Church, to give you an idea, because it was too not conservative enough, I'm sorry. And so it gives you an idea where he is. He happens to be a college professor, retired now, but he literally writes me emails all the time calling me a pagan.
Right.
And things like that.
Well, he doesn't know the origin of pagan. You know where pagan came from?
Let's talk about this.
This was after Christianity had been established as the official religion of Rome. You know, Constantine helped create Christianity with the Nicene Council of 325 A.D., but that only made it one of the official religions of Rome, and actually, later on, it was then made into the only state religion of Rome, and by that time, they started persecuting everybody who wouldn't agree to be a Christian, and so a lot of the people rebelled against that, and they were sent off to part of the Roman Empire called Pagi. P-A-G-I,
uh-huh.
And they were known as pagans.
Right.
So the pagans weren't the first people, you know. The first earlier people were what I call natural spirituality. And that's where I'm at. I believe in natural spirituality.
The name of the book is God's Genes and Consciousness. And we're talking with Paul Von Ward. And Paul, we kind of skimmed over this in a broadcast. You kind of have to. But
sure.
You put a lot of stock into, like, the Egyptian culture and the pyramids. I find that hard to believe that they could build that was slave labor.
Oh, I think that was part of the earlier phase of civilization. That I think some of it even preceded the cataclysm of 11,500 years ago, you know, which is referred to as the flood in the Bible, the deluge and some other legends. So I think some of it was there beforehand.
So in other words, it's not really too far out for us to talk about previous civilizations and them being gone, and maybe we might lose this one, but the spirituality and everything will continue, mankind will still...
Well, I think consciousness and we as manifestations of the consciousness in some form would continue on, and we may be in that sort of a cycle right now. I hope we're not. I mean, I hope we're going to prolong it for a while and get our act about, together better.
Yeah, I understand. But so the whole thing here is they've been here forever.
Been here as long as we have, practically.
And they'll probably be here after we're gone or somewhere.
Well, I'm hoping, you know, Jerry, I think I'm hoping that we become, before we close this cycle out, truly galactic citizens. I mean, citizens...
So you're still optimistic?
I'm optimistic. I think human mind, the human spirit, can actually take some steps to bring this divided species that's so fragmented today back together. And if we do, we can make the next step, both inner consciousness and external exploration, to expand into the solar system, into our, at least our galaxy, and join a community of beings, conscious beings, who are obviously active in our universe.
You know, some of the, back to the original conversation about early myth and early fact and how it kind of gets intermingled. It seems to me that a lot of things, man, humankind, I guess is the best way to say it. We're always anxious to point in things in an evil or nefarious direction. Have you ever noticed that?
We're
may not even be there.
That's right. Well, what I'm suggesting is that's a perception. I mean, in a universe, it's a self-learning universe like ours. You have construction and destruction. You have positive and negative forces. But what we do to learn from those experiences is what's important. And I think that the human species is a self-learning species, and we can learn from these mistakes. And
What do you got in the future? Another book?
Well, I'm working on something now that I'm calling The Four Modes of Spirituality. You asked me whether I had a religion. I said, no, I don't have a religion, but I have spirituality.
Yes.
I have a natural spirituality. But I think on the planet we've got a spectrum from supernaturalism to mystical, magical thinking to the real dyed-in-the-wool, physical, materialist who thinks only in the five senses and what you can touch and feel. And then I think you have a natural spirituality which sees the whole universe and all of these beings and all of these dimensions as a part of one natural whole. And what we have is a creative force, source, by whatever name you want to use. I don't use the name God because it has this connotation of beings coming down from the skies, which is where the word God came from in Sanskrit and Old High German. Same as Deus in Greek, Dios in Spanish.
All kinds of, even in the Hebrew alone, I mean, there's Yahweh and Jehovah. I mean, are we talking about two different people there or what? We don't know.
Well, Yahweh and Jehovah were the names for one of these beings. And there were, if you look at the Bible, it talks about the plural gods, the Elohim. And then it talks about the Anakim and others.
I know when you came on the show, you didn't know we were going to talk about the spirituality and the Christian aspect of this. But the thing that troubles me, and I've never heard an answer, and trouble's not even the right word. Most religions and even spirituality certainly is built upon one. Why couldn't it have been a committee?
Well, it could have been a committee.
Yeah.
But you see, I'm opposed to the idea of deifying and making into divine beings any of these beings. So I would go back to the early, oldest Atman, which was the Hindu tradition, the use of Atman, Ashura, Allah. Mm-hmm. It was the Hebrew tradition that got caught up in the Yahweh mode. If we go back to the idea of oneness, allness, almighty, to me that's the concept of God in nature, nature in God, it's one and the same. I mean, we're just little manifestations of that central consciousness.
And I certainly agree with your premise that you take, even today, I start to say prehistoric man or earlier civilized men. Today, you can take it right here in Eureka Springs, a guy driving down the road here tonight, and he runs across an extraterrestrial or something. He's likely to get a religious connotation out of it.
Well, it depends on his worldview. Uh-huh. See, if he's a religious person, he'll say, oh, I saw an angel.
Or he might have seen a devil.
Or a devil, depending on whether you thought it was positive or negative. But if you're a participant at this conference, you'd see that same being, and you'd come say, I saw an E.T. And that's why I'm using the word advanced being and ABs to sort of level the playing field so that we don't give a pejorative or overly positive definition. We just take it neutral. You know, it's a being more advanced than we are because it can disappear and appear. It can talk to us or choose not to talk to us. And that's the only thing. Not necessarily more moral, not necessarily more spiritual, not necessarily more, you know, ethical. I mean,
yeah, we're reading things into things that are maybe not even there.
We're projecting our own needs, our own interpretations on the experience.
And we, in everyday life, run across several people. Well, I didn't mean that when you're talking
exactly,
to somebody.
Exactly.
And you didn't, but they tell you that.
Or you meet a person for the first time, and you just immediately form an impression, that person is a nasty guy, you know?
Yeah.
And then you realize, hell, he's just like I am. He's a nice
right.
fellow, you know?
Right. Paul Von Ward, it's been a pleasure. Anything that you'd like to bring out I haven't talked about?
Well, I just think I would like to encourage people to get in touch with my website, if that's appropriate.
Well, of course it is.
It's just simply www.vonward, that's V with a Victor, O-N-W-A-R-D.com. And I have on that website, I have this little questionnaire about consciousness quotient for people to sort of rate themselves and see what their level of conscious awareness is of this multidimensional universe of ours. And I'm also working on this, as I say, the four modes of spirituality. And people who'd like to do a self-assessment to see sort of where they stand in terms of supernaturalism and mystical.
And they can do that on your website.
They can get in touch with me on the website and do it. And I don't mind email messages, just paul@vonward.com. And
okay.
It's a good way to get in touch.
And we have that on our website.
Oh, you will.
To a link over to it with this interview.
That's great.
And I'm interested in how the survey goes.
Yeah, well, I'll let you know.
Over a period of
let
time.
You know.
I imagine what you first get 2 months later, when you get more people inputting, might change completely.
Well, the reason I want to announce it on programs like this is to get as many different groups.
Right.
Because to make it work, you've got to have people who have all these different worldviews. And when we have enough of a sample, then we can sort of see how we stack up as a society.
So basically, you're optimistic.
Absolutely. Still optimistic.
And the ABs are not necessarily good or bad.
I see them as a neutral, you know, it's like other humans, good, bad, positive, negative.
Have you ever run into one yourself?
Well, you know, that's a long story. I had
got a couple of minutes.
Well, I had two friends when I was a young child. You know Whitley Strieber's book, Secret School. I had two teachers. I can tell you their names. Woke and Wokum. And I would come out of the woods. We lived out in the country and farm. And I would come out of the woods and I'd tell my parents about, you know, my friends. And it was very interesting because they were country folks, farmers, but they didn't make fun of it. They accepted it. They told my aunts and uncles. And
that is interesting.
And later on, you know, when I was a teenager and even as an adult, they would from time to time remind me of that. So that was my first introduction to what I would call ABs. Know the term at the time, of course, but I just called them Woke and Wokum.
You haven't been back there to see if they're still there.
I haven't been back there. That farmhouse was burned down 40 years ago. I haven't been back there. But I've had a few other experiences and many paranormal experiences.
Well, next time you're on, we'll be talking a little bit about those and a little bit about your latest project.
And look forward to it.
And the book and the website, they're mentioned on our website at jerrypippin.com if you're a radio listener. It's God's Genes and Consciousness. It's available.
It's available online and from the publisher. And on my website, you go to the home page, click on the publisher, and you can see the event schedule where I'm going for conferences and talks and lectures and also the books there.
Oh, it's been a joy.
It's a pleasure. I'm delighted to meet you and take part in this. It's wonderful.
Okay, thank you very much. We've enjoyed it. This is Jerry Pippin, and we're broadcasting from Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Our on-location producer is Roberta Scott. Until next time, cheers.